नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading this morning two verses, 27 and 28, and we'll chant together text 28, Canto 3, chapter 31. The glories of being a small child. Tu dam tyatma tvacham damsha. Shaka katanadaya rudantam digatak jnanam kramaya krimi kam yata tu dancha matvacha dangsha dangsha Mashaka kat mat kutat kutunadaya Rudantam vigatak jnanam Kramaya krimikam yata.
I'm
going to try again. Tudyan tyama tvacham dangsha Mashaka makunadaya Rudantam vigatak jnanam Krimaya krimikam yata Tudanti. They bite. Amatvacham. The baby whose skin is soft. Dangsha. Gnats. Mashaka. Mosquitoes. Matkuna. Bugs. Adayaha. And other creatures. Rudantam. Crying. Vigata. Deprived of. Jnanam. Wisdom. Krimayaha. Worms. Krimaka. A worm. Yata. Just as. Translation. In his helpless condition, gnats, mosquitoes, bugs, and other germs bite the baby whose skin is tender, just as smaller worms bite a big worm. The child, deprived of his wisdom, cries bitterly. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word Vigata Jnanam means that the spiritual knowledge which the child developed in the abdomen is already lost to the spell of Maya, owing to various kinds of disturbances and to being out of the abdomen. The child cannot remember what he was thinking, what he was thinking of for his salvation. It is assumed that even if a person acquires some spiritual uplifting knowledge circumstantially, he is prone to forget it. Not only children, but also elderly persons should be very careful to protect their sense of Krishna consciousness and avoid unfavorable circumstances so they may not forget their prime duty. Want to read the next verse also? Text 28, translation. In this way, the child passes through his childhood, suffering different kinds of distresses, and attains boyhood. In boyhood also, he suffers pain over desire to get things he can never achieve, and thus, due to ignorance, he becomes angry and sorry. Of course, this doesn't happen to girls. Purport. From birth to the end of 5 years of age is called childhood. After 5 years, up to the end of the 15th year, is called Pauganda. At 16 years of age, youth begins. The distresses of childhood are already explained, but when the child attains boyhood, he is enrolled in a school, which he does not like. He wants to play, but he is forced to go to the school and study and take responsibility for passing examinations. Another kind of distress is that he wants to get some things with which to play, but circumstances may be such that he is not able to attain them, and he thus becomes aggrieved and feels pain. In other words, he is unhappy even in his boyhood, just as he was unhappy in his childhood, what to speak of youth, coming attractions. Boys are apt to create so many artificial demands for playing, and when they do not attain satisfaction, they become furious with anger, and the result is suffering. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gananjana Sadakaya Chakshuran Miditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svatatantikam. Well, the glorious position of a child being born, celebrated by all, not just the parents, but society. Another picture is being presented here in the Bhagavatam from the perspective of the small child. In the story of Ajamila, when the symptoms of death were upon Ajamila, and he was coughing and expiring, fear gripped him when he saw the Yamadutas. And the specific description is his mind went with great affection to his small child. And Prabhupada explains, the word is that's used as sneha, not neha, but sneha. And sneha, one of the meanings of sneha is affection, another meaning of sneha is oil. And he explained the reason, or the similarity of these two terms, the connection between these two terms is, oil goes down, something like water seeks the lowest level. Just the nature of liquid, it goes down as far as it can go. So, similarly, Ajamila had 10 children, and his affection went most to the youngest child. And Prabhupada was saying this is natural. Affection goes to the young child, and it's not just your own young child, any young child, everyone is, you know, gaga over a young child. They can stop in their tracks in the middle of something and feel happy seeing the small child. Even the child may be crying in discomfort. But affectionate. It's just, it's natural. The message of the Bhagavatam here is to show what's happening to the living entity from the perspective of the small child, or even going before that, the movements of the living entity through the phases of life. The rosy picture isn't so rosy. The condition of a soul that's captured by the modes of nature and their previous karma, and thus receiving a body, isn't from that, from the perspective of the captured soul, it's not as pretty as we think it might be. One of the mentions in this purport is from an earlier section, when the child is in the womb of the living entity. Sometimes, rarely actually, the living entity is in such a distressed condition that they pray to God, please get me out of this situation. The description is that up to the, of course the numbers are a little different from a Western perspective, but from the 7th month, the child becomes conscious. And in modern medicine, this is called the 3rd trimester. So, and with the Vedic culture, there's a ceremony where a samskar, where the child is instilled in the womb of the mother. With that passage from unconscious to conscious state, there's a samskar, and the benefit goes to the child, and it's a nice ceremony. Conscious means, like, there are three states of consciousness: deep sleep, sleep, and awake. So it comes to the state of awake. So some things can happen when you're asleep and you're not aware of them because you're asleep. And then there's deep sleep, that's like under anesthesia, or at the time of cosmic annihilation, or the state of the living entity that's when first conceived. It's in that condition, deep sleep, susupti. When you're under anesthesia, things like people cutting open your body and things like that, you don't feel it because the soul is still conscious, but the state of consciousness is so deep, so covered, that you don't feel it. Anybody that's had the experience of some anesthesia, where you're some surgery and you're out, or even just some procedure, medical procedure, and anesthesia and you're out, you don't feel the passage of time. It's not like when you're asleep. I was discussing with Pitrushava, and when he had that thing with his throat, and was under anesthesia, the operation took however long, a few hours. And then when the anesthesia was wearing off, he had some fluids in his throat and was coughing, and so they gave him some further anesthesia. And when he woke up, he described, it was as if, hey, no time had passed. I had something recently, what you're supposed to do when you get a little older, just to see if there's a problem, and so some procedure, and I was lying with all these tubes, and then they switched to another set of tubes. There was the anesthesia tube, the IV, and so count downwards from 10, and I remember getting to 9. And then then I remember waking up and looking around and saying to the nurse, when are they going to take me in for this procedure? And she said, look at the clock. You know, it's an hour and a half later. Wow. So it's different than when you're asleep and you wake up and, okay, so now I'm whatever you feel. So there's a sense of time. And when you're deep sleep, there's not a sense of time. It's deep. And, of course, there's stages, but there's, like, it's not just a bucket and a bucket and a bucket. There's gradations. Even when you're sleeping, there's different stages. And when you're waking, there's different stages of awakeness, of alertness. So the child that's in the womb at 7 months becomes awake. And then the description is there. You've been covering this in the class, but he's in this airtight bag. And different things are happening to the body, and he can't move. So mothers that have been through pregnancy know what that's like. The child starts to move, whoa. And the child wants out. Let me out of here. So our acharyas describe that if one living entity is very pious, something like the verse from Bhagavad Gita, four types of chatur vidha vajante mam jana sukritanorjana, those who are sukriti and exceptionally pious. Those who are pious, when there's some difficulty, they turn to God. Those that are impious, when there's difficulty, they become angry with God. So some living entities who are very pious, while within the womb, they pray very intently to God. My dear Lord, this is very, very difficult circumstance. Something like we might, in an adult stage, say, oh, this is a very difficult circumstance. Somehow or another, please relieve me from this difficult circumstance. I promise you I'll continue, after the circumstance is over, to engage in your devotional service perpetually, unceasingly. So we get serious every now and then about our Krishna consciousness, or some life-threatening or very dangerous circumstance. I even observed it in New York City. People became reverent. They became respectful. They slowed down. They prayed to God. At every corner, it was after 9/11, every stoplight, every crosswalk, people obeyed the signs. Instead of, darting in front of the cars to get to the carrot, get to their appointment, or get the whatever it was they're after. At each corner, at those little places where you walk, don't walk, there were shrines, every corner, all over the city. Place to stop and pray. That changed. But because the circumstance created that intense dependence upon God. So here it's being referred to from something previous. The small child, here the distress is there, but the degree of distress is not sufficient. It's just fruitive. I want to enjoy, I want to get my toy, I want to get my the object, and I'm being bitten by varieties of other living entities, adi bhautika klesha, other living entities are causing me disturbance. That's what this krimaya krimikam a small worm biting a big worm, like that, yata. They're experiencing these different miseries. And rudantam, crying. But the crying is because of the physical discomfort. But the higher position, taking shelter of the personality of Godhead, vigata jnanam, by the influence of maya, has been taken away. Any position of proper understanding of what I'm passing through is taken away by the influence of maya. What to speak of thinking that my real identity is spirit soul, not this body, that a child doesn't have that capacity. Although previously, when in very, very, even more difficult circumstance within the womb, some living entities pray, "Oh my dear Lord," something like Gajendra Moksha. Gajendra Moksha. Gajendra, you know who Gajendra is? Huh? Couldn't hear. A little louder. Ganesh. No, Gajendra. Gajendra Moksha refers to Gaja as an elephant. Does that help? Gajendra. He was the elephant that previously was King Indradumna, and he was cursed to become an elephant. He became a king of elephants. That's Gaja Indra, king of elephants. And he was bathing, and the crocodile grabbed his leg. Remember that one? Yeah. That's Gajendra, and he was fighting. He's the king of elephants. He's fighting with the alligator. And he wasn't winning. So the fight went on, and the Bhagavatam says, 100 years? Can you imagine fighting for 100 years? He was becoming weaker and weaker and weaker. But the crocodile was in his own element in the water, and the elephant was out of his element in the water. And so the crocodile was maintaining strength, and the elephant was becoming weaker and weaker. And he came to a point where he realized, "I'm finished." And when he reached that state of, it's no longer on the strength of my own power, ability, prowess, intelligence, capacity, that's not sufficient. And the consequence is, "I'm finished." Then in his recollection came prayers that he recited in his previous life as King Indradumna. And boy, did he recite those prayers sincerely, from his heart, because there was nothing else, no other shelter. And when one feels that there's other shelters, according to Queen Kunti, one is not capable of calling out sincerely to God, because you call out sincerely to the other shelters. Like Ajamila called to his son out of affection. What's a small boy going to do when the Yamadutas are taking you away? Nothing. No way. But because of affection, his thought went there. So that capacity, vigata, jnanam, vigata means deprived of, or his knowledge was stolen by illusion. You've heard that phrase many times, knowledge stolen by illusion. Covered, the state of covered consciousness. The desire of the living entity is to enjoy. Universal. We want to be happy. Nothing wrong with wanting to be happy. But if the desire for happiness is reposed on a misconception of who I am and what is happiness, then one's knowledge is stolen by that illusion. Real happiness is taken away. Even the possibility of it. It's never there in the illusory conception to begin with, but the factual conception, the factual position of happiness, it's deprived. One is deprived. Vigata jnanam. Then the next stage. So, okay, it's going to get better. Once I have more, intelligence, more capacity for reason, and all those nice things. When I become a little older, instead of just in bala, in childhood, or as a young, up till five. But then poganda, from 5 to 15. The indication, I want to play. I was at the during this past Christmas weekend during japa, the adults were in the temple room chanting, and I saw some children outside in that poganda age, 5, 6, 7, 2 or 3 boys. And one of them I walked up to, I won't mention his name, and said, "Do you have your beads with you?" He just looked at me like, like it was the police. He was just caught in a burglary or something. And he, made a face and shook his head, couldn't speak. "Yeah, I'm not a terrorist, I'm just asking you, do you have your beads with you?" "No, I left them home." "Okay, well, would you like me to get you beads, or would you like to play?" I said, "I'd like to play." Okay. So it's not just children going to school, it's tendency during that age of life wishing. Of course, other souls may have a tendency. They like to go to school, and they like to chant, and they like to do devotional things, and that's very special. And this was a very special soul. This is a young boy born in a devotee family. But, surprise, he wanted to play. Something in there says, I want devotion to Krishna. He likes kirtan, but he doesn't like japa. It's because you have to pay attention in kirtan or japa. In kirtan, you just have fun. It's play. Musical stuff. So that's the nature of this childhood phase. I want to play. And things that come that are these conditioned tendency, the Maya tendency is, I don't want to do that which is surrender to Krishna. That's this Vigata Jnanam. I want to have fun. In the illusory conception of what is fun. Playfulness of a child is not bad. It's just that it's ideal if that can be directed in relation to Krishna. Somehow. In relation to Krishna. And gradually, as thought of Krishna and attraction for Krishna grows, then that other kind of playfulness fades and the joyfulness of being in activities in relation to Krishna can grow. The challenge of being a small child or the parent of a small child, wishing that attraction for Krishna grows. But then this small child behavior shows its way into adult behavior also, of not being so attracted to devotional practice or having a desire for a toy. And for the adults, it's, some other more sophisticated manifestation of a toy, something that I like, that brings me happiness, I want that something. And the endeavor, the struggle to get that something, or get the means to get that something, and on it goes. Specifically, with the loss, or in the absence of, what the real higher purpose of life is. So sections like this in the Bhagavatam, there's a similar one with Prahlad Maharaj, where he's instructing his classmates, where Sanda and Amarka have left the classroom, and it's party time. They want to play. But Prahlad says, no, let's engage in devotional service. Let's have kirtan. Oh, Prahlad, we'll do that later. Now we're children, we want to play. And so he goes through a different kind of, but similar description of at every stage of life. It's brilliant. This principle, and illustrated, is makes it very clear. There's always something. Besides, there's always something that's disturbing. There's always something that makes us think happiness is here, and our attention gets distracted in pursuing that happiness. And then another one, and then another one, and then another one, and alongside of it is the unwanted part. And we just, the happiness never happens. It's like the carrot that's at the end of the stick, and the donkey is taking one step, and then another step, and another step to reach the carrot, but lo and behold, it's always one step further, and one step further. And happiness is like that. It's the anticipation of happiness that's called happiness. And there's something to when the senses contact a sense object, I got it. But what is that? It's illusory. It invites duality. Rivera was explaining it so nicely in Chicago. It's a sucker punch. It's here's something that says, ah, and the next moment, boom. That's not happiness. And it bewilders the mind. It, by design, it distracts the mind from reality or sat, and it invites the mind into the realm of asat. And with that asat, whatever that momentary something of the senses, it very quickly, the sensation changes. It becomes an item of suffering instead of an item of enjoyment. And one becomes further drawn into the whole realm of illusion, and with it duality. With this comes that. And very reasonably, one can say, we don't want the mix, we want unmixed. We want, without exception, we want happiness that's always nice and doesn't have a mix, and it's ever increasing. That's what we want. Universal. It's, as they say, it's a no-brainer. But it's never like that. And then ask the question, why is it never like that? Shouldn't it be like that? Or why is it that everybody wants that? And the answer is, it's our nature. Okay, if it's our nature and everybody wants it, how come we're not getting it? Because we're going down the wrong path. And these sections, as Prahlad is doing and as Shukadeva Goswami is describing, or Maitreya is speaking to Vidura on these topics, it's to help us understand it's not what it appears to be. As the saying goes, all that glitters is not gold. It's not what it appears to be. Here's what it is. It's a healthy dose of misery. along with whatever that, okay, I'm a little boy and I got the toy. And what happens after some time? He puts the toy away because it really doesn't bring satisfaction. He wants another toy. But if another child comes along and wants that toy, look out. Mine. We've all seen it. And then the parent has the nice task of teaching, you should share your toys. And on it goes. You know, then you become an adult. Okay. Share your toys. Mine. That the illusion is very strong. So it helps, the purpose of these passages is to help us let go of that tight grip on illusion, or the tight grip that illusion has on us. And we can see the anatomy of illusion more clearly. And with that, some impetus to go more towards Krishna, more towards reality, more towards that which is eternal and absolute, and not this realm of duality that's ever-changing and illusory. There is a very clear distinction. At least from the platform of knowledge, sambandh again, understanding basically what's what. These are Krishna's energies, and here's how they work. Our real identity is something else. It's not that. Our real identity is this eternal spirit soul that wants eternal, unmixed, and ever-increasing happiness. And that's possible in the realm of Sat. It's not possible in the realm of Asat. It's not the plan by design. It's different. It's a place of dukkha by design. And the label has a warning. Anyone who takes this product is going to get misery. That's the label. And we buy more. Buy one, buy a dozen of them, just keep buying them. This type of misery, that is, they all have the same label. Maybe not, you know, the commercials on television or wherever else they have commercials. But, you know, that's the scriptural statement. And those that have some wisdom, that's how Prabhupada has translated this word again, not just knowledge, but wisdom, somehow we know what the label says, and we go, yeah. But then it slips through our fingers. So maybe a nice question to spend couple minutes on is, how do we not have it slip through our fingers? When your bucket's got a hole in it, what do you do to keep fix the bucket? You just get another bucket, or what do you do? Plug the holes? How to keep wisdom, those things that we know intrinsically, from seeping out and escaping? Anybody have a good answer? Yeah.
You've taught us gratitude. Strengthening the gratitude muscle for what we receive.
Okay, we've been down this path before. What did you touch on?
There's one statement in the Shastra about how someone has, particularly in reference to Brahmanas, but you could apply here, someone has wisdom and doesn't share it, actually their wisdom.
Ah, atrophies.
Yeah.
Okay. It's something like the principle of Ramiya?
I would say the other version is that we have to repeatedly try to practice that wisdom until we actually have a platform of standing on
it. It's similar to the application. One of the rules of in education, you know, not Hare Krishna education, but the other kind, the regular education, one of the rules of helping to a student or an audience to retain is they repeat and express it to others. It helps you retain. If you're listening with that disposition, not just I've got an exam, the teacher's going to ask me what was said in the class or in the book. You know, that's something, but that doesn't stick. At least that's my experience. I don't remember too many things that I studied in school and that stick. I suppose there's something, you know, if I had to do some algebra or English grammar or something, some words from foreign language class and some principles of science and those kind of academic things. But it's not, if it's especially motivational things, if it's shared, and even more so if it's conscientiously applied and regularly shared and regularly applied, then academically you're going to retain it. Like within science, there's the class and then there's the lab, the laboratory. You take the principle and you go to the laboratory and you do a little experiment and voila, you get to see it happening. So in our Krishna conscious training, there's things that we hear, things that inspire us, things that move our heart, and we start to apply. So the continuous application, but this other point that Jamunajivana brought up is something that I've expressed in the past. When you continue to act in the relationship of the person from whom you heard that something, it endures better. Now this, here's two scenarios. Somebody's reading something or discussing with somebody or hearing something, however that wisdom might come from, and they think, wow, that's really good. Now I've understood something that I need to work on, and I'm going to, and immediately the mode of passion takes over. Kartaham iti manyate, I'm going to go do it. And for a while, depends on how strong the mode of passion is and how many other things are grabbing one's attention, one may do that for a little while, but after some time the enthusiasm fades, and quite possibly even the thought of that nice, inspiring something that's going to help me a lot fades. It's gone. So that's something we've all experienced. And then there's another scenario where you receive something from Prabhupada's books, or again these same sources, some discussion with some devotee, or you're hearing the class, or there's something that happens and goes, you go, wow, that's really, it's really good, and it really applies to me, and this will help me a lot. Then you continue to consider not just the message, but the relationship of the person from whom you received that message, and continuing to act in that relationship, let's just say from Prabhupada's books. Wow, Prabhupada's giving this gift of transcendental life, and this is an element of that transcendental life, and I'm feeling very grateful, recognize what the thing is, and I'm feeling very, very grateful to the person who gave the thing. And so in that relationship with Srila Prabhupada for giving this transcendental wisdom, let me carry it out, because I know that will please him very much. Because why did he make all the sacrifices that he made? He wanted to give people spiritual life, transcendental life, and that will please him. So when you act in that way, it's more enduring, and it's also more endearing. It's more satisfying. And then there's reciprocation, because it's not imaginary. it's real. And when, just like Krishna discloses himself unto the hearts of those whose hearts are open to him, who approach him in genuine devotion and love, Krishna discloses in degrees, or Krishna may come before the person if he so desires, or somehow reciprocate. So as part of this process of bhakti, it's a reciprocation of love. So remembering the relationship of that person who has given us spiritual life and acting in that relationship, there's strength. And otherwise one can't continue. One won't continue. Then you go back to get, okay, better go read again because I lost it. And then you pick up something else, and you know, we need to let go of the fruitive doership mentality and instead accept the servant mentality, that the master wants to, that my spiritual master, our founder Acharya, wants to give us our ticket back to Godhead. He wants to qualify us so that we are eligible for going back to Godhead. That's what he wants. He's giving us all these wonderful things. So each of the things, and the broader thing too, wow, let me accept, let me act in that relationship by receiving and acting upon what he's given me. That's bhakti. That the seed that is to be sown in the heart and continued to be nurtured by the process of hearing and chanting. And it will grow and grow and grow. And otherwise it will grow it for some little spurt and then not do so well for a while. And then, oh. But acting in relationship with our founder Acharya, whose instructions we're all living by, I'm going to stop there and see if there's any discussion on this topic or whatever. Yes.
This is regarding the soul and the karma.
Yeah.
And if the soul is not affected by anything, then how come a good karma or bad karma is going to affect the soul?
It won't affect the soul. It'll affect the contaminated consciousness. But if the soul is not identifying with matter, it won't affect that soul. Karma doesn't act on the soul that's not misidentifying itself with matter. Matter will still undergo its transformations because it's matter is being moved by the modes of nature. But supposing the soul is not identifying with all of that. The metaphor that's used in the Bhagavatam, one of them, is the lotus flower remains untouched by water. So there may be a storm and the surface of the water is rough, but the lotus flower is not touched because it's above the water. Similarly, if one's consciousness is absorbed in my real identity and my relationship with Krishna and so on, like Prahlad Maharaj or others, surrounding them may be awful circumstances. Their consciousness is untouched. So the soul is not. But contaminated consciousness makes one think, oh, something. Look at the circumstance. Look at my suffering. Woe is me. All right?
Thank you.
Okay. Ramiya?
Well, I was just wondering if you could explain further how this happens, that the soul, when he takes birth, he forgets everything. He has to start over. But everything material, but the spiritual development he's had, he doesn't forget. He seems like his intelligence is totally brought down, everything. So how does he continue?
Well, the information content may be emptied, but disposition may not. Some children show propensity for dance or intellect or music or something from you know, not just little babies, but you know, there's skills. So the content and the basket may be empty, but the propensity may still be there. And then, based upon the experiences, and this is where the role of the parents is especially important, what do the parents bring the child in contact with experientially? Then impressions are made, and depending upon the ability or propensity, it makes an impression.
But in the womb, when it's like in that deep sleep, totally unconscious.
Yes.
And when he awakens, that whole consciousness he had from a previous life comes back to him?
The memory of the previous life doesn't come back, but propensity does. And upon birth, and the, you know, awake, and then birth is another awake, just not confined. And there, so there's like the coin and the book and the brain. What's the propensity? Well, impelled by guna and karma.
And Krishna also is reminding one what we should do.
Sure, exactly. According to one's inclination. Sure. Yes?
Hare Krishna Mahesh. Follow-up question of Prabhu's follow-up question. When the soul gets conscious on the seventh month, so when it gets the conscious, does it get the spiritual intelligence and also the material intelligence, or just only the spiritual conscious?
The soul, just as well, it's two things. Depends upon the piety or the, put your microphone away. It depends upon the piety or impiety, the degree of taking shelter of God or not taking shelter of God. Chatravita bhajante mam jana sukritanorjana. Sukriti or duskriti, depending proportionate to the sukriti or duskriti, the tendency to take shelter of God or not is going to be manifest. That's one part. It's not exactly spiritual. It's religious. It's depending upon God. And the material intelligence, it's part of the covering. There's a gross body, but there's also a subtle body. As the gross body is developing, the subtle body is also there. Not at some point there's a subtle body. The subtle body is also there. So mind, intelligence, and false ego are there. So, baseline, material intelligence, and variable degrees of piety and impiety, various degrees of what you do in different circumstances, depending upon one's past activity, piety or impiety. Does that answer your question? Something else? Yes.
Guruji, I've been thinking about this being distracted by material energy. In this case, it's distraction. The child kind of gets bewildered by this or that. Or, and then there's a, seem like there's another feature One is distraction or attraction to the material energy. Another is weakness of heart. The example is the worm and stool. The worm comes out of the stool, but because of my understanding, right, weakness of heart goes back into the stool.
Well, that's not exactly an example of weakness of heart. Weakness of heart is like Arjuna. The knowing weakness of heart, this is my understanding anyway, weakness of heart is you know what to do, but you don't do what you know is to be done. And what's the reason why? Weakness of heart. You can say the other way is insufficient, you know, enthusiasm behind that which you know. But the other way is weakness of heart. You have the avat.
Here's my real question.
Huh?
Here's my real question.
Okay.
It seemed like some, I know for myself, maybe this is happening, if the weakness of heart is hiding behind, I'm dependent on Krishna for removal of impurities. I mean, in other words, I'm trying to ask the question of the balance between, you know, saying
effort and mercy.
Yeah.
Well, both have to be there. It's not Krishna alone, which is true. Krishna alone can remove this obstacle called material existence. Okay, so I'll just wait till Krishna removes the obstacle of material existence. Krishna, I know you're merciful, so anytime you're ready, I'm ready. There's something that we need to show Krishna, this is what we want. That other is insufficient. Necessary, but not sufficient. Now, certainly Krishna can just intervene and, you know, kripa-siddha, just imperfection. That can happen. Krishna has the power. But the common is sadhana, siddha. We're instructed and because of our faith in Krishna, etc., we follow. And Krishna sees by sincere, consistent application. It's not just the activity itself removes the contamination, it's Krishna removes the contamination. But it's not that Krishna is a janitor. Krishna is just pure. And in contact with Krishna, we become pure by contact with the Supreme Pure. So it's the condition of heart. And part of the exhibition of that condition of heart is some endeavor. The perfect example, because it's scriptural, is Mother Jasoda trying to bind Krishna. She's making some endeavor. It's not happening. You know, the Sabalila, so she tries more ropes and more ropes and more ropes, and that happening. Because Krishna wanted to play. Krishna didn't want to be bound, he wanted to play. When Krishna wants to play, no one's going to stop him. And then he changed his disposition. He showed his kripa shakti instead of his icha shakti. Just change the channel. And she could bind him. Seeing that desire. And the desire wasn't a desire to control Krishna. The desire was of a mother. Her affection for her son. Which her son happened to be Krishna. Alright?
Yes, good night. From my side, it seems like the effort should keep applying effort, and the patience part, I think, is where
Because the conditioning is, I'm making effort. That should, I'm a controller. I'm getting things done. Look at all the things I get done. And I have a whole history of getting things done. So here's another getting things done item. And I lose patience. It's not happening. I'm not liberated yet. Okay. Yes.
Gurmaharaj, what do we do if the wanting to please the spiritual master, that is sporadic?
What we do if our wanting to please the spiritual master is sporadic?
Yeah.
Make it consistent. You strive. And one of the hints was already given. See, the question you're asking is similar to the other question that I raised. It all seeps through. So how do you keep it from seeping through? You act in the relationship. Which each of the things that you do that you know this is good for me, do in that spirit. Here's the training. You've probably heard me say this before, but as a brahmachari, the training that I received was each thing that you do, from the alarm goes off in the morning. Why are you getting up at some early hour of the morning? Prabhupada gave this instruction. Now I'm going to go take my bath. Why am I taking my bath? Prabhupada gave the instruction. Now I'm applying my tilak. Why am I smearing some clay on my forehead? It's Prabhupada's instruction. And there's details behind the instruction. Why am I putting my dhoti on? Why am I running down the stairs to go to Mangalarti? Why am I, what am I doing? Why am I doing what I'm doing? It's my spiritual master. It's for my well-being. He wants my deliverance from this material existence. So each thing, not some things, each thing. And in fact, that is how our life and devotion is organized. Why do we eat what we eat and do what we do and say what we say and read what we read and speak what we speak? And our life is molded in such a way that we're following, by the mercy of our founder Acharya, we're doing those things which will mold our life in such a way we'll always think of Krishna. But we think of Krishna through the agency of the representative of Krishna, because that's just Krishna's arrangement. He wants that. Don't we? Okay, Krishna wants it. That's the training. And then you apply the training. Like Ramana Pandit was saying, you take and you apply it. So apply it. You just cultivate. Anushilana. Bhakti is a type of cultivation, Prabhupada describes. Nectar, devotion, introduction. That's the cultivation. Step by step, and each step. If I'm not taking this step for Krishna and my spiritual master, why am I taking this step? Why should I go down this path? Let it be in pursuance of, for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, under my spiritual master's guidance. And not otherwise. This life is simple and sublime. Rimiya, you got something?
I was just wondering that somebody could be approaching sadhana with the mood that I want to become purified, but it seems like that's not sufficient. It must be service mood there.
Yeah. Well, purified is mode of goodness and service is transcendence. But service can also be I want something. I want recognition. I want liberation. Something. I want a pat on the back. I want something.
Seems that it's hard sometimes to identify what's going on.
Well, One response to that, for me, is the standard response, is assume that there's a mix. And you amplify the one and try to weed out the other one. But it's on the strength of amplifying the one. It's the strength of the relationship with Guru and Krishna that you can identify what, where the weeds are. And do a little, you know, horticulture study. What's the plant? What's the weeds? And when you see the weed, you remove the weed. Not just clip it, but you, you know, from the root, you remove it. Yes.
We've been hearing how important it is to give to others what we receive.
Yeah.
So how can we develop or increase that desire to give to others?
By two things. Why? And from whom does this understanding come? That's one. Understand what the thing is. Why? And then the relationship of those from whom I received this understanding. And keeping both in mind, why and from whom this has come, the second part is, little by little, little by little, you do it. But not just do it, but in that relationship. What it is and from whom, what the value of this thing is. Then little bit, little bit, little bit. And then just, it grows. And then it becomes just second nature. Like book distribution. I know you like book distribution. How many people in this world wake up in the morning and think, "Ooh, I want to go take books about Krishna and go find people I don't know that are off in a tizzy in the direction of material enjoyment and introduce them to Krishna book"? Who wakes up in the morning thinking like that? After practice, someone may think like that, but it's not born of the modes of material nature to think like that. But we do that because why? We, you know, Prabhupada gave us this knowledge and he wanted others to have, so we assist him. And lo and behold, it's fun. You feel something. And you know that what the other person is receiving is, whether, you know, it's unlimitedly valuable. It's the best thing I can give them. Fantastic. I feel something. So, and I repeat, not just do, but it's cultivation of that, just as I described. Why? What is this thing that I've received? And then after some wows, look at that, the person. And then in that relationship, it shouldn't be, I'm up here, you're down here. It's just sharing. It's the beginning. It's part of my purification. So it doesn't just seep through my fingers. It's something that will help me by developing this relationship with the persons from whom I received this thing. That's bhakti. And also, I know that they want, so on their behalf, I'm an instrument. Let me try. It's the relationship. And then comes other relationships. Someone says yes. Fantastic. Someone says no. No problem. We just continue to carry out as the instrument. And I find, wow, this is purifying me. I'm becoming detached from fruitive spirit. Fantastic. I feel a lot lighter. So I can go and approach anybody, everybody. And they can say whatever they want to say. It's okay. Because there's something so valuable here. I'm inspired. And when somebody's inspired, something happens in the hearts of the persons who that individual meets. Yeah? Yeah? So like that, using the example of book distribution, other ways of Krishna will inspire your heart. I was at the physical therapist for my knee, and I was in this, you know, hooked up to a machine, da 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 da. So the assistant came in and said, "Are you comfortable?" "As comfortable you can be in the material world, I'm comfortable." I said, "Well, is there another position you'd be more comfortable in?" And I didn't say it, but I was thinking, Goloka Vrindavan. And then later I said it to the therapist. You know, that was my thought. Goloka Vrindavan, that would be very nice. So, depending upon the circumstance and understanding, you know, time, place, circumstance, the individual, if the desire is there to share what you have received, immediately you're under the internal potency and you're protected. The circumstance is not going to condition you because you're not receiving unwholesome association, you're giving association. Just in that consciousness. And Krishna will open doors. Circumstances will be created where the person, the place, and the circumstance permits you to say something about Krishna. It'll happen. Naturally. You know, when the light's on, you can start seeing things that you can't see if the light's not on. So just there's those same steps that I mentioned. And it will happen. In your life, it'll just, as you mature in your life, it'll just become like that. You don't have to be a dogmatic fanatic or something. Just, you know, you are who you are. A nice, juicy devotee, and somebody bumps into the nice, juicy devotee and they get some juice. Bump into a glum jam, and what happens? Get some juice. Devotees are, I like that. Because they're feeling full of inspiration. And they want to share it with others. Last question. She always gives good classes.
I've been thinking on one statement she made, and if you could please help me. She was trying to understand, Maharaj, how to always remember to be the instrument. Like she was giving the example, like we are like the screwdriver. We are there. We are just an instrument. The screwdriver doesn't think that I did it. I've been struggling with that a lot. How to be an instrument always in the right consciousness?
In the mood of service. Oh, Maharaj, why do you say that? It's the reality. It's the replacement for the illusion. The illusion is false ego. And what's if false ego's gone? What's there? I'm simply a servant. So you cultivate the mood of service, and it displaces the doership mood. The doership mood is the mode of passion. The mode of passion burns, right? Yeah. So, and it, besides, it's not reality. We're not the doer. We're the instrument of illusory energy, or the instrument of Krishna's internal energy. And I have a choice to make. And that internal energy position is Krishna is the master. I'm the servant. Let me cultivate that mood. And Krishna may, you know, it may be that one is thinking, oh, that's too far away. So then the spiritual master, representative of Krishna, and those persons in your life that are carefully helping you in your spiritual progress, let me act in that relationship and be the instrument of that. as Dravida was saying repeatedly, the mission. You recall? That's the bigger picture. So what's my role in the mission? And so just like Rami is saying here, take that which you received and give it. If it's not strong, how do I make it more strong? In the Buddha's service. And how do you get that? So it's those other steps. Just stay with it.
I'm noticing, Maharaj, that I'm all the time going up and
down. Okay. Okay, but that's not new. It's not knowing is not new to you. It's not new to any of us. It's called Anishtita Bhakti. That is a nice name for it. So with faith, let me stay the course. It's like physical therapy. You've had some physical therapy. So, you know, Vitu was saying, okay, see if you can lift your leg. Oh. Okay, but good. That was good. Now, try it again, and you know, okay. Put it down. Like that. And after some time, movement becomes a little more. Right? Similar. According to your capacity, you carry out the instruction. You're in the mood of service. You're the instrument of the instruction.
Then how does one come to peace with the fact that my capacity is so tiny? Because I've noticed that...
Because you're tiny. Just accept it. Just accept it. Just accept it. That's how you come to peace with it. Krishna's, he's given this capacity. Your capacity is less than some others, and your capacity is greater than some others. So be it. That's my capacity. You know, I got a knee. I can't move so fast like I like to move. My capacity just got reduced. So be it. Let me do what I need to do to get that thing working again. But if it doesn't work again, so be it. Except that the parameters that Krishna has given for me to work with. I work with it. Just accept. It's a relationship with Krishna issue. Bottom line. This is, you know, I've created my situation. Krishna's not being unfair. He's given, according to my past guna and karma, here I am, with this body and mind, and my, you know, capacities and limitations. I take responsibility for that. But I'm not going to go lament over the past. I'm going to accept my circumstances and stay always in my relationship with Krishna. I'm just paraphrasing Lord Brahma's prayer. You know the prayer. One of your favorites, probably. Yes, I accept. But one thing, let my mind not budge one inch from the position of serving lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Let my mind not budge one inch from that position. And then I'll hold the position. If mine goes over there and I lost track of the position because I'm weak. So as soon as you, the advice in Bhagavad Gita, from whatever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, you know what to do. You bring the mind back under the control of the self. There's a master and I'm a servant. You cultivate that mood. And then it goes. That's the unsteady part. And you just bring it back. You just abhyasa yoga yoktena. That's my position. I'm a servant. Tiny. You know, that's not